I need my master volume higher than everybody else's.
Woo! 3, 2.
Chris needs to comb his hair.
I think he looks good. I think he looks like kind of.
He looks like Ben Affleck.
He looks very manly right now.
Yeah, he looks like Ben Affleck right now.
I'm into this.
Yeah.
Hey.
George Clooney-ish.
You know, I've been told I look like George Clooney before.
It was a long time ago.
Welcome to On the Bench. It's been a while. Josh, hello.
Hello.
I don't know what the face you were making was. I wish I could describe it to our listeners.
I'm ready to pod, Brandon.
It was pouty. Pouty potty face. Christopher, what's up?
Not much.
Let's get into it. We have a full episode for you guys. We got recruiting stuff. We got FSU football team stuff. We got basketball talk to Christopher to get into as well. So a full docket here for you today. Not going to waste any more time and get right into it. The big news, the big talking point that I want us to get into, fellas, is that quarterback Nico Markiol visited Florida State along with some he was doing a tour, I guess. He was also at Florida earlier in the week, but he's checked out a couple of campuses. This is a big target for FSU at quarterback in the 2022 class, someone the staff has been in on a while, and it seems like his recruitment's kind of reaching its apex here. It's starting to kind of wind down a little bit. So Josh, I'm going to throw this to you first. What are we hearing on Nico Markiol, the visit, anything right now? I know he's been hard to get a hold of.
Yeah, this was a important visit, like you said. Nico's a guy that the staff zeroed in on early. He was one of, I believe, two or three quarterbacks that FSU offered nearly as soon as Mike Norvell walked on campus for the 2022 class. Really, since March, Nico and Florida State offensive coordinator Kenny Dillingham have struck up a very solid relationship. And Nico tentatively had plans to visit FSU last spring, but of course those got canceled. He never made it back, he never made it to Tallahassee. But over the weekend, him and his family made it down to Florida. As you said, they made it to Gainesville, I believe, on Wednesday of last week. Things are a little murky. I've been moving. But he was in Gainesville on Wednesday. He made it to Tallahassee on Thursday afternoon. He really was able to view Florida State's campus on Friday. Of course, these visits are, not only are they unofficial, but this is a dead period. So there's no face-to-face contact, meaning the staff or anybody associated with FSU coaching or recruiting cannot have any contact with Nico or his family while they're on campus. It's crazy, I know, but this is just the way that things are going these days. So Nico did his own thing. He posted some photos. Where did he go, Chris? We saw him at Madison Social.
Madison Social. Looked like he got inside the stadium with his mother, at least, and took a photo in there. Sod Cemetery was another photo I recall seeing from him. Also, one of the walkways around campus. Not 100% sure which part of campus that walkway was at, but somewhere near campus, yeah. A canopy road type of walkway, which is something Tallahassee is somewhat known for.
So what the staff can do, I mean, there's very little they can do to personalize these visits. But before the family gets on campus, they can tell them, like, hey, you know, the stadium might be unlocked. If you go to the stadium at this gate, it may be there. You could maybe get on the field. Who knows? Right across is the Sod Cemetery. I think you should walk by there after you guys tour and go look at the business school or whatever, you know, school he's looking to. Stop by Madison Social. That's the best food. They can kind of map out their visit for them. But for the most part, it's the recruit and his family are 100% in charge. So,
yeah, I had a coach not affiliated with FSU, but at another school, tell me that right now you paint a picture for a kid and you let them come and fill in the spaces they didn't figure out when you were painting. That's how you're kind of doing these visits.
Right. We haven't been able to get a hold of Nico just yet. Not really sure what his timetable is for a decision, but I've talked to a couple sources. They feel that something could come here in the next, you know, maybe conservatively in the next 4 to 6 weeks. I think that would be a good timetable for Markiol to make a decision here. But he hasn't come out outside of his top four. He has not come out and put a timeline on his decision just yet.
Yeah, he's ranked number 220 overall. He's number 9 pro style quarterback. That's according to the composite rankings. He's a 6'2", 216 pound slinger. he's a good athlete, but he's listed as a pro style quarterback, but he's capable with his feet as well.
How many quarterbacks are they taking in the 2022 class? Do we think one, two?
Definitely one, but I think two is not outside the question. I think it depends somewhat on how that room where it currently stands, how it shakes out. Mm-hmm. Presuming both of the guys that came in last year remain here, Jordan remains here, you add another one. I don't know that you definitively take two, but they've offered about 13 kids at the position, so I think they're certainly casting a bit of a wide net, at least making sure that they have options if they need to go that direction.
Yeah, your boy here currently has Nico Markiel crystal ball to Florida State. I was actually the first person to do so on 6/15, so it's been quite a while that I've had him crystal ball, and I wouldn't change that at this point. I still think out of all the quarterbacks FSU's offered right now, Nico is probably the most likely to commit to Florida State. Of course, a lot of that is going to depend not only on his timeline, but some of these other QBs that FSU is recruiting. I posted on Knowles 24/7, I think it was on Friday or Saturday, that right now it seems like the next 2022 QB that could be visiting FSU is going to be MJ Morris. MJ Morris is another quarterback, just like Nico, that the FSU staff identified as soon as they walked on. He was one of those handful of 2022 QB offers that went out. He's out of the Atlanta, Georgia area, and I was told that there's a good chance that MJ Morris is going to visit FSU this weekend. Now, we've heard that before. And as with all unofficial visits, nothing's set in stone because you can't purchase plane tickets for him or anything like that. So it's just kind of on the family. But I am told that MJ Morris could be in Tallahassee as soon as this coming weekend. That would be very telling because talking to my sources about FSU's 2022 QB recruiting and the wide, you know, net that they've cast, I asked, you know, what is up with all these offers and who are the top guys? And the message that I was told was the staff loves all these quarterbacks. If they offered them, they are sold that they can come to Florida State and help this program. What they are doing, though, is waiting to see if the interest is reciprocal. They want to see of these guys that we feel can play here, we're going to offer all of them. We're going to see who's going to come visit us, who's going to show us reciprocal interest. We're going to lay all our cards out on the table and say that, you know, we want these guys. So it's vitally important to pay attention who's coming to campus. And right now, you know, Nico is on campus this weekend. If MJ Morris comes to campus next weekend, I think that's a really big move for Florida State QB recruiting in this class. It's just kind of wait and see because, you know, we're at the mercy of the dead period. There's not a lot that the FSU staff can do besides just invite them to campus and let them know that they want them to come.
Morris is listed as a dual threat kid, definitely lives up to that title. He's ranked number 73 overall and number 4 at the position for dual threat, according to the composite. I'd heard late last year, November, December timeline, that Georgia Tech had done a really good job there. Obviously, hometown kid, it mean a lot. They're always making a push to keep ATL kids home. And that Stanford was one that when he got that offer, he's been very intrigued by that offer. He's an academically sharp kid. He goes to Pace Academy, which is the same school that produced FSU basketball commitment, Matthew Cleveland. Very good school, excellent athletic school, but also an academically strong school, produces really good student athletes. Mm-hmm. To Josh's point about quarterback offers, they've offered 13 total kids. Some of those offers preceded the current staff, you know, a kid like Chad Masco, for example. There's a couple others. We've seen them offer about a half dozen kids here in the last couple months. Taven Jackson from Indiana was the most recent. He's the little brother of Trace Jackson Davis, basketball player for Indiana, has played really well against FSU the last 2 years, for those that recall those games. He's listed as a pro-style kid. He's 6'5", 185. He's a pretty good athlete, too, in his own right. Big arm, big-time Indiana kid from a very good high school over there in Center Grove. FSU also offered one of his teammates a defensive tackle at the same time that they offered Taven. Some other recent offers were Tanner Bailey from Alabama. Cade Klubnik from Texas that Josh caught up with, who has mentioned an interest in visiting. Sam Horn.
He picked up A&M over the weekend.
Yeah, he's got multiple familial ties to A&M. Is that correct? I think mom and dad both
have. Yeah, let me put a little comment. So Tanner Bailey out of Alabama, Gordo, Alabama, big time arm, 6 foot one, 195 pound pro style. He visited FSU. Granted, I don't know if this discounts it, but he was on a family vacation to Disney and they stopped in Tallahassee on the way, but he didn't stop at any other Florida school. So I think that's a decent sign for FSU. Cade Klubnik, to me, I think he's my personal favorite on the list of QB offers that Florida State has put out. He plays for Westlake High School in Texas. He won a state championship, put up ridiculous numbers, has offers from a ton of teams, but picked up Texas A&M over the weekend, and I think that could do it for him. A.J. Duffy, he's out of California, but he's transferring to IMG. That'll get interesting because Kenny Dillingham is the primary recruiter at IMG, and they got a relationship. And then talk about Sam Horn a little bit. He's kind of a message board favorite, would you say?
Yeah, to add to Duffy, he's been to FSU. He visited with Jack Peterson, tight end, who's also transferring to IMG from California. So Duffy has some familiarity with FSU. Sam Horn is teammates. He's from Collins Hill, Suwanee, Georgia, Collins Hill High School. He is teammates with a five-star commitment, Travis Hunter. He is Travis Hunter's quarterback. Travis Hunter plays both ways for Collins Hill, obviously racked up a lot of touchdowns on the season. Sam's a 6'4", 190 pro-style quarterback, pocket passer. They played for a state championship. He helped lead them there. It was a state championship, right? Not semifinals that they went to. Correct. No, they got very deep in the playoffs. I think it was a state championship.
Yeah, they lost the state championship.
He didn't play particularly well in that last game. So people, of course, saw that on TV and made all their judgments based off that one game. He had a monster season. You can plug in the stats. You can look at the highlights of his entire season. Sam can dish it around the field. I think there's a few guys they've offered, Cade being one that I'd agree with. Both of the kids we talked about early on, Nico and especially MJ, that I would definitely take before Sam. But Sam's certainly a capable quarterback.
Let's take a step back real quick and look at Nico if we can. The schools that he's mentioned as his top four was Florida State and Florida, which we talked about him visiting. Arizona State is another school that he's familiar with, and obviously that geographically makes sense. And then Rutgers is the fourth one. So it's an interesting smattering of his finals, right?
Yeah, and he had put out a top, I don't know, it was six, eight, ten, something beforehand, and a couple of those schools weren't even part of it. So he has shown the ability to pivot and switch in his recruitment. But I think the fact that he took the visits to the two Sunshine State schools kind of speaks to those are going to be ones that will be in it till the end.
And we believe that those are both those schools, Florida and Florida State, would take Nico, correct? He's a take for both programs?
I think I can confirm he is for FSU. Mm-hmm. Today, you know, timeline, I can't say how long he would remain a take for FSU. For UF, I did some dig and talked to Blake Alderman and some other people. It doesn't sound like he's the top quarterback on their board, almost similar to FSU. It sounds like they're really all in on Ja'Kari Brown?
Yeah, South Georgia.
It sounds like he is by far and away their top target, but they did offer Nico, and nobody really knows. Like, if he were to commit to UF in the next week or two, Blake thinks that they would take his commitment, but it's just not sure. He's kind of one of these guys. I don't think Nico has the timeline that maybe a Cade Klubnik has or some of these other quarterbacks. I think if Nico wants to punch his own ticket to wherever he wants to go to school, then he's going to have to make a decision here probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks would be my guess.
We've seen in quarterback recruiting, and the timeline has moved up some. It used to be summertime. Now it's almost a spring before their senior year. But there's that domino effect. We've talked about that in the past, right? When one quarterback pops, all of a sudden everyone starts gathering their spots. It's like musical chairs pretty much. I did have this working theory back when FSU extended the batch of three or four quarterback offers in 2022, about a month ago, that FSU was almost using that as one, because they are interested in expanding the board. They don't want to be caught in the same place they were this past year with Luke Altmaier. But two, I think a way to kind of expedite maybe the process for Nico a little bit, because he's been someone they've been in on a little bit, and say like, hey, we're expanding our board here. Let's try to move things along if you are interested in us. I don't know that for a fact. That's just more a theory on how quarterback recruiting can work.
A couple final points on quarterback recruiting. 13 offered. None of the 13 have committed yet in the sense of being currently committed. Some have previous commitments. Braden Davis is another one that was a recent FSU offer. He's a dual threat kid. He spent some time at Lake Mineola down in Central Florida last year. He won't be there next season. He has ties to Delaware. I've heard IMG thrown around, but obviously Duffy landed there, so I don't think he'll land there. I'm not 100% sure where he's going to play ball next year. He's a dual threat kid, another pretty academically strong kid, so he's one to keep an eye on. That's about it. I think that it still is the first two is kind of where FSU's at, but I think they obviously cast a wide net to make sure that they get a very quality quarterback in that class, if not two.
When it comes to taking two quarterbacks, I think the transfer portal has forever changed two quarterback recruiting classes and the way that these coaches are going to approach it. I don't think, like, say FSU lands Nico Markiol in the next 4 weeks or something. If they plan on taking two, I don't think they're going after Nico and one of the guys we mentioned. I think all these top arms that we talked about will be off the board. And I think if you're going to take two now, you take that second QB scholarship well into the fall, because you not only need to see who emerges in these pandemic times with no camps and all this, no spring football and stuff like that, but also the transfer portal. You don't know how your roster is going to shake out. It might be more advantageous for FSU to take a veteran arm later on with their second scholarship than another high school arm. You know, you don't know what's going to happen with Jordan Travis or the current roster, and Mackenzie Milton's likely to move on. When we talk about FSU taking two in this class, I just want to set the precedent. I don't really expect it to be Nico and a guy like MJ Morris or Sam Horm. I think it's going to be Nico and then somebody way down the road, you know, or I shouldn't say Nico, but that first QB and then somebody else way down the road.
The one concern with the transfer portal, to your point, is that sometimes taking a guy via the portal, especially a guy who may have 2-3 years of eligibility remaining, that will cause a guy currently on your roster to decide, well, hell, I'm going in the portal because they don't believe in me. They're taking this guy. Obviously, coaches are paid a lot of money to kind of handle those situations, mm-hmm. try to make sure those rooms are in check and everything is explained thoroughly and try to keep everybody on the same page. But we know the reality of the situation is that sometimes when one is brought in, it forces another one out.
Yeah, but sometimes we've also seen, you know, somebody gets named starter in September and the two backups leave. And now all of a sudden your two guys that were on the roster are gone. You don't want to bring in two freshmen with them. You might bring in one freshman and one veteran. So all I'm saying is, because of the transfer portal, guys leaving and coming, I don't think two QB recruiting classes are going to be solved in the spring. Like, I think that second scholarship is going to be held for a very long time.
Maybe more than any other position, quarterback is a position where you almost constantly have to recruit or at least have names on the board because of the fact mm-hmm. that it can so quickly go from being a strength of a squad to, man, we're one injury away from playing a guy we don't have any interest in playing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Which has been a Florida State's quarterback situation more or less the last post-Jameis. J.J. Cosentino in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. Remember that?
Oh, boy, do I.
Hey, real quick, before we transition, I want to get into some transfer portal talk, and Josh has some good scoop there. Letting our listeners know, if you know someone who knows has a business in Tallahassee or looking for advertising, where to put their revenue into do a little bit more advertising, expand their business, On the Bench is open for business. So they can slide into my DMs. If you know someone who has interest in doing advertising on the podcast here, the wildly popular On the Bench podcast, Josh, are your DMs open?
Yes, and we can move product, whatever it is. I mean, we can sell insurance, we can sell finances, whatever it is, liquor.
I feel like Josh saying we can move product is probably not great. Chris, do you want any part of this? Can they reach out to you?
No, I think Josh said enough for the all of us.
DEA, soon come. Oh, we should have the DEA advertise on it. All right, Josh, move on to the portal updates. Let's go. Two offensive tackles entered. So, of course, you know, big deal, right? Big deal for Florida State, maybe, maybe not.
Hey, I mean, apparently it was a big deal on our message board. Like I said, I closed on my house on Wednesday, moved in on Friday, unloading boxes all weekend. But apparently a couple guys hit the portal. You really notified me of it and said that I needed to look into these guys. So the first one was Jameer Johnson. I think he hit the portal on on Thursday and I spoke to him on Friday, something like that. And he was in for 24 hours. He said it was really hectic. He was talking to a bunch of teams, including Penn State, USC, Florida State. It was funny, as I talked to him, I said, you've been in contact with Florida State? He said, yeah. I said, have you talked to Coach Atkins yet? And he goes, no, I haven't talked to him. He's texting my phone right now, and he's trying to set up a phone call with me tonight. So I'm going to talk to him tonight. And much like every offensive lineman that I talk to that's in the portal, they feel very overwhelmed. And Jahmyr Johnson said his phone just was nonstop ringing, you know, ever since he announced he's leaving Tennessee. I followed up with Jahmyr on Sunday, and I was told that Florida State was in contact. They reached out, but they are not going to pursue Jahmyr Johnson, much like we've seen with nearly every portal prospect that hits the market. Florida State will make contact. They'll reach out. And what they're doing is they're just trying to find out, you know, what's this person's situation? How many years do they have? Why are they leaving? When do they plan on making a decision? What are they looking for? And FSU is just doing their due diligence on every single one of these guys, because you just never know. I'm told Jahmyr Johnson's not a fit for Florida State for whatever reason, whether it's talent, on field, off field. I don't know. Didn't get too much information. All I want to know is, do I need to keep covering this kid? And I was essentially told no. And the same can go with, now, who was the second name you brought to me?
Willie Tyler from Texas. And I think he was a pretty highly rated JUCO player before he went to Texas.
Yeah, and I think there's some connection maybe through Thompson or something through prior recruitment, but I was told no, okay. FSU is not going to pursue him. So I also confirmed that Florida State is not active with any current offensive lineman in the portal. Just to cross it off the list, right now there's nobody in the portal that FSU is pursuing, and I don't think it really speaks to FSU as much as it does just the, while there's a ton of quantity in the portal, there's not a lot of quality in the portal.
Well, so I'm going to ask this question on behalf of the FSU fan base, because I think this is something that we're going to hear a lot of. You look at Jahmyr Johnson, you look at his resume, he's a 2.5-3 year starter at Tennessee. Obviously they've had some offensive line issues, but his metrics are decent from when he was at left guard and at left tackle this past year, not as great because he had injury issues. So what FSU fans are going to say is, what is FSU waiting for to come out in the market at offensive tackle if a decent SEC caliber player isn't of interest to us?
I got to assume that they're waiting to find something that's better than what they feel that they have on the roster. I think that, you know, everybody's in the portal for a reason. Some of these guys have been an issue with their team. I'm not going to, you know, name names, but you know, there's been some, it just doesn't come just squarely on talent. Let's just say, if you think about the guys that have left Florida State, of course they've transferred on and gone elsewhere, but any Florida State fan has a story to tell about them on why they were a bad fit here, you know? So the same can go for all these players hitting the portal. You don't see really, outside of maybe like a Wanye Morris, a real bona fide blue chip, you know, former blue chip recruit that started games in the SEC that's transferring elsewhere. A lot of the players that you see are either lower level or even backups just putting their name in the portal.
The truth is the offensive tackle may never come along.
That is a hard truth to swallow right now, but it is a truth.
I think obviously they hope he does, and they're going to do their due diligence to find one if it does come. But I think fans need to understand it may not come.
Mm-hmm.
I do think some people are waiting for, like, think that there's someone on the line that FSU is just waiting to play out. I don't think that's...
There are a lot of people that believe that.
Yeah.
There's always kids that flirt with the possibility of leaving, and I'm sure there is someone of that caliber that, yes, fills the need and the desire, but also a person of that caliber is going to have a lot of options, and FSU isn't going to be probably the best one necessarily. But they don't all enter the portal. That's the thing, is that there's plenty of – we deal with plenty of kids on the current roster at FSU who consider the idea of going in the portal that didn't do it or took 3 years to do it, you know, examples like that. So, yeah, I just hope it comes along, but don't believe it will certainly come along.
Yeah, there's no ace up the sleeve. Like, there's some fans and people that write on Knowles 24/7 that – talk almost assuming that, like, it's an if and when FSU gets their guy, you know, it's just a matter of time till he reveals himself into the portal. That ain't the truth. Like, if that was the truth, I'd tell you, because, you know, the people that I talk to within the Moore Center would be a little bit more confident with the prospect of landing an offensive tackle for next year. So while there's no ace up their sleeve, they are still actively pursuing somebody to come in and have an impact at the left tackle position. But like Chris said, the truth is that might not happen.
And they're constantly evaluating. They intend to look at these states that are going to play spring football. They're looking at guys who are late emerging guys.
Mm-hmm.
They're building up the board further and further in hopes of finding the one. But it's clear they're not just going to take one to satisfy the need of taking one. They want somebody who is going to truly help them. And that is defined by what they can do on the field, how they view them off the field, what they bring to the team dynamic, how they improve the team from a leadership standpoint. All of these things matter. And when the portal kid comes about, if one does come about, for FSU, it's going to happen quickly. They're either going to get them, which we've seen them pull that off multiple times in the portal, or they're going to be out of it quickly and understand they're probably out of it.
We did get a question, and this is related, from listener and Knowles 24/7 message boarder, Carrie D. Knoll, asking, if we land a quality left tackle transfer, do you think that one specific addition is enough to make a big difference in the win-loss column? I think the answer to that is yes, right? Like, I think a surefire starter at left tackle and what it does for the rest of your offensive line and offense is probably good for like one extra win.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at FSU and people ask what happened to that program, there's obviously a lot of answers to that question. But I think the one consistent answer over the last half dozen years is that the O-line's been abysmal. It's been garbage. It's been trash. It's been no good. It's had no depth and no talent. And it couldn't afford one injury. So, yes, yeah, something that drastically changes a lot of those dynamics, yeah, I think it makes a massive difference.
That's why people are always going to keep asking us about left tackles. And when someone potentially who fits that role enters the portal, I think that's why the fan base is so hungry for that to come to fruition, almost like they're willing it to happen. So we'll monitor it.
The truth about left tackles in college is that there's not enough of them to go around the entire college ranks.
I remember Alex Atkins, when he was on the podcast, I guess a year ago or so at this point, asked about the way people view offensive linemen and why it's so difficult to develop at that position and find those guys. His point was, you just don't see a whole lot of 6'6", 300-pound human beings walking around this planet. And then to find ones who are athletic enough to do what they need to do to play college football, it's a very, very small pool that you're pulling from.
Someone once told me the NFL has 32 teams, which means 64 left tackles, and about 32 of those teams are looking for a second left tackle who's good. About 16 of the 32 teams are truthfully looking for a left tackle that's good to be a starter. So that kind of speaks to the fact that it's just a position where there are only so many guys that can do the job at a high, high level. Now, FSU can certainly find guys that do it better than they've done it here in recent years.
Yeah.
And that's a position there.
And that's where we're at. Florida State is trying to elevate the floor and get better. For the offensive line, it's to go from what was putrid a couple of years ago to what was below average this year to now you're trying to just be average, serviceable in the Power Five. That's the next step that you're trying to take.
And a true left tackle allows FSU to move the pieces around to fit more where they should naturally fit, which is kind of a big deal.
I hope we get to do that podcast one day where we can talk about all the options that open up when they get a left tackle, if they get a left tackle. What that does for other guys. We'll see.
That's good for both the short and the long term.
For sure. So with that in mind, kind of pivoting a little bit, it's still a recruiting related topic here. Let me get Josh back in. Josh, we're talking about offensive tackle still. We're talking about that still being a possibility for FSU. People are going to start wondering, well, are the numbers?
Are they still a priority for FSU?
So it is a priority. So it is something that we believe if there were to be a talented player, they would have room for. So that goes back to your theory. I've heard this once or twice from you. The numbers always work out. So let's talk about scholarships and allotment and distribution.
Oh, you
and
sucked me back in. I did. The numbers just talk.
Thought you were out. I pulled you back in.
You know, I love to talk numbers. Look, the way I view it is there's two sides to this numbers conundrum, and both can be true. There's the analytic side, which you're on, and you and Chris do a great job of breaking down the spots that are available with what's on the roster, and you guys mix it in with the NCAA rules. You track the numbers under a magnifying glass to a T. You know, it all makes sense. But then there's another side of it, and that's kind of the side that I operate on, and that's the intel that I get from my sources within the Moore Center. When I talk to them, they're still recruiting guys. It would seem that based on your calculations that we don't have room for, but they're still recruiting them. So personally, I'm not a numbers guy. I prefer to go by feel. And the feeling that I get is that the staff, they're not really recruiting for a final spot or two. To me, you know, when I talk to my, it feels like they have like a broader scope than that they're just dialed into these final two spots or so. And I'm not saying it's conflicting information. Like, none of this is new to me. Jimbo and their staff recruited the same exact way. I'm used to the staff saying numbers are one thing, but the actions and the way that they recruit tell me a different story. And I just say the numbers always work out and everybody was fine. I'm not going to go on that rant again. I'll save you that rant. But, you know, regardless of the numbers or what we think the numbers are, my job is to cover guys that FSU recruits. And Mike Norvell and the staff are recruiting, a half dozen guys right now for maybe a final spot or two. So you guys keep calculating the numbers, but in the meantime, I'm just going to cover whoever the staff's recruiting. How about that?
That's a great intro to the fact that we're 10 days away from signing day, which obviously with transfer portal and such isn't really the end of it all, but it is a penultimate event for it all.
Mm-hmm.
I think FSU adds one that day. I think Destin Hill is the addition. I don't know where Tywon Malone is going at this point. I think it will be FSU, A&M, or Ole Miss. If I was a betting man, I'd probably lay a little money on Ole Miss, but I might also lose that money as things stand right now.
Are we going to be excited if they get Destin Hill on signing day? Like, absolutely. Or is it going to be anticlimactic at that point?
Well, I mean, I'm just glad you're going to be able to hit publish on a story you wrote 10 months ago.
I wrote one in March. I think I wrote another in July pre-write, because remember he made that unofficial visit to campus in July. We thought he was going to pop after that. This will be my third Destin Hill shell story for his commitment.
Oh, you just write new ones?
I have been, because they're so far back in the admin. I didn't even go look for them.
Yeah, mine's from his junior film. I'm assuming he improved and that he had good senior tape. Actually, I know he did. His senior highlights are really good.
Hold on,
Josh, with the numbers. Hey, God, what I heard from you with the numbers was that FSU has room for 30.
Don't do that. I hate you so much.
No, everyone, disclaimer, not what I'm saying.
To Chris's point about signing day coming in, it feels like it's months away, but it is months away because this 2021 class, let's be honest, they're going to be active in the transfer portal all the way to August.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's going to be kids that emerge in the spring for 2021.
There's going to be spring football in Virginia. There's going to be spring football in California potentially. You don't think that there's a 6'7", 6'8", 285-pound former basketball player that's converting to football that's just waiting to be found in one of those two states? It's possible.
Some JUCO kids are going to come out of the woodwork too, probably. So, to Josh's point, I think the staff recruits as though they're recruiting to add talent. They're not, at this point, they're not recruiting to add a receiver, add a DT, or add an OT. Obviously, those are needs and things they would like to address, but they are recruiting to add talent to make their football team better. So, if there's a guy out there, say, all SEC running back, for example, a kid who is a bona fide stud, a dude that you know will help you win football games, a scoreboard lighter, to steal a Jimbo Fisherism, you go after it because it's going to help you as a football team. Yes, you're going to be shorthanded at left tackle possibly because you take this kid, but I think that's how this staff views recruiting, especially in this cycle where it's sort of a free-for-all with a lot of kids looking to make that instantaneous move. So I think that speaks to why you're hearing Josh say that they are still looking at 5-6 kids and are not necessarily the Destin Hill, Tywon Malone, mythical offensive tackle that we've talked about. It could be a night kid.
Very intriguing. It's a good time to take a commercial break, and then we're going to transition over to a little bit of hoops talk and then some FSU football talk, and then we'll wrap things up. So stick with us. We'll be back after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
All right, welcome back to On the Bench. Christopher, the platform is yours. What was your headline for FSU's the Hoops win over Clemson? Was it Eviscerates? What did you use?
Yes, disemboweled those Tigers.
Disemboweled. Oh my God. Does disembowel mean like the stomach area, or does it just mean you like a broke skin?
I believe so.
Okay. All right.
I mean, I'm not one to maliciously kill animals. It's not really my thing. I do eat meat. God, I love meat, but I don't do the work to get there. FSU's 9-2 now, 5-1 in conference, are second in the ACC behind Virginia. It's pretty clear cut at this point that them and Virginia are the cream of the crop in the ACC. Louisville is a team that probably should be in that conversation, but has not looked like a team in that conversation. That includes FSU going to their place this past Monday and just kind of putting it on them. They took it to Louisville. They did what they wanted. Chris Mack, head coach of Louisville, as well as some Louisville players, essentially used the description of they got punked by FSU. They're not the only ones. Clemson got punked by FSU. They were down 38 points at one point on Saturday afternoon, and FSU sort of did whatever the hell they wanted, despite the fact that Jamie Lucky and his crappy officiating crew wanted to keep sending Clemson to the line and giving them free points. FSU's played 4 games since coming out of that COVID pause, and they've looked like arguably one of the top 3-4 teams in the country in those 4 games. They've consistently led by 20 or more points in each of those games. They've hit shots from every part of the floor. They've gotten to the line and hit at a high rate. They've been good around the rack. Balsa Koprivica has been very good in recent games. He's definitely a guy that is trending up very quickly in the sense of getting on the radar of people that we don't want taking him away from FSU at the next level, but he's getting there. He recorded his first career double-double on Saturday against Clemson. He's been close to getting those 10 boards a couple times. He finally grabbed a 10th one on Saturday. Raekwon Gray Turk, 11 points in about 11 minutes on Saturday, kind of speaks to his just Turk is a dude that is focused in on this season. It's unbelievable to watch him, to listen to him talk about the game of basketball, and you can just tell when a guy is kind of fully tuned in. Tony Douglas's last year here is another basketball example of a guy who just, he was there. Like, you knew all he thought about was hoops. He was processing the game in real time. He was making decisions that were smart decisions. The thing I've loved about Raekwon this season is when FSU needs a basket, you know, teams making a run or FSU's just ice cold, he uses that big body and the kind of sneaky athleticism that comes with it that's deceptive to the opponent sometimes, or at least a difficult matchup for the opponent. And he gets to the rack and he finishes and he gets a big bucket. And he's been excellent at doing that 3 or 4 times when FSU's needed it, especially since they played poorly in that stretch of the UCF Gardner Webb and the first Clemson game where they lost two of those three. And they just didn't look like a normal FSU team. Defense was woeful. Energy was poor. They've gotten so far away from what they were in that short stretch to looking a hell of a lot more like what Leonard Hamilton teams usually look like. Their energy has been unbelievable. Their defense is getting there. It's still not great. There's still some ball penetration issues going on. But in general, help side defense is drastically better. Guys are doing a really good job. A guy like Sardar Calhoun, who had a career-high 13 points against Clemson, he is coming into his own. He still struggles in the team concept of defense with regards to switches and things of that sort. I think that will come with more time. But when he's just on a man with the ball, he can play some D. He can play man D. It's just in the team concept, he has work to do. But he is getting there. I think this is a description of the lack of an exhibition season, a lack of an October, November that was a normal college basketball season. It is causing some of this learning in real time in January in ACC play. But, man, they look good. MJ Walker got a little banged up, caught an elbow from Tenor Ngome in the Clemson game, knocked him pretty woozy, sent him to the locker room. He did a TV appearance yesterday. That's probably a pretty good sign that he's feeling okay. Anthony Polite dealing with a bit of a shoulder issue. He's missed since the UNC game, two games. He's probably going to miss at least the Miami game, if not a couple more, before he comes back. Leonard Hamilton calls himself a mother hen in that sense. I think that's very true. He's never in a rush to get a guy back who's a little banged up. He'd much rather get him healthy and have him for the stretch run in March. But FSU's got Miami at home midweek, Georgia Tech, and then they got Wake and VT coming up. The big game on the calendar, if you're circling one, is probably around mid-February. They host Virginia. I think it's February 16th, that Monday night, if I remember correctly. That's the game. That's the ACC game to keep an eye on right now. But they're playing really, really good ball. They look like what an FSU team should look like. The depth is really starting to emerge and show. Malik Osborne's come back to life and been that dude. And when he plays at a good level, his energy is just through the roof, and that team feeds off of it, and it's really fun to watch. He had a block on Saturday that was just fantastic, kind of set the tone for them defensively to some degree. Yeah, pieces are coming together. A guy like Ngum's getting a little better on the interior, which is helping to relieve Balsha when he needs to hit the bench. Yeah, we've talked about Turk. MJ's been very consistent throughout the year. Polite, when healthy, is a big-time defender for them. You're starting to see the clear, defined roles and the rotations that are working, and I think one big step for them as they work towards the NCAA tournament and ACC tournament, if that still goes down as usual, is figuring out what rotation do they turn to in those final 4 minutes of a tight game that's going to win the game. Who's going to shut them down defensively? Who's going to make shots? You know Turk, you know MJ, you know Polite are probably definitely parts of that. I think Balsha has become part of that, especially against bigger teams. But they're still figuring out that rotation as a whole. And then it's them playing together and getting a rhythm in the – just a feeling where it becomes so natural on the court, but it's all coming together. And it's surprising. COVID pauses for some teams have led to really bad, rusty basketball out of it. And for some teams, they've been very sharp and good out of it. FSU's been insanely sharp out of it. And they're going to move back in the AP top 25 this week. And I think they're going to make a drastic move. If I was an AP voter this year, I would have FSU in my top 10 right now, without a shadow of a doubt. Baylor's better, Gonzaga's better, Michigan's pretty damn good, Villanova's pretty good. There's a couple others, but FSU's right there after that bunch that I mentioned.
What do you think, Chris, clicked during the time off with the break from the COVID?
Well, I think more than anything, they realized that stretch of UCF, Gardner, Webb, Clemson, that's not FSU basketball. That's not what this program has become known for, defined for. The bench wasn't scoring points. The energy was crappy. The defense was poor. And the defense had been poor before those games, but not to the point where teams just took whatever the hell they wanted. And UCF and Clemson very much took whatever the hell they wanted in those two games. I think some of that came about. I think also the ability to get some practices in there leading up to the return. I think for a guy like Dar Calhoun, a guy like Ngome, it's the mental and physical conditioning of this level of basketball and what's expected of them and what they have to do. They both have looked drastically better. And then Osborne coming to life has been huge. Osborne's such a piece of the puzzle. He's a great dude. I think if you listen to the pod and you hear me talk about him, you know that I think extremely highly of him, both on and off the court. But, man, when he brings it defensively and he gives you a few points, hits a couple jumpers because that's something he's effective at, but also brings that energy on the interior, especially on defense, it really changed this whole dynamic of the team. It makes teams a little more fearful of attacking the rim, which, you know, a couple teams earlier in the year were not scared at all of doing so. And in other ways, it just, I think it reinvigorates the team. It gets the bench going. Malik is the biggest cheerleader when he's on the bench, and he's the biggest energy bringer when he's on the court. And that's a great dynamic to have in a single player. And there's a lot of guys on this team who are really good dudes, great teammates, energy guys. But he, to me, defines that for FSU basketball currently more than anybody on the roster.
Okay, let's transition to a little bit of FSU football talk. First update here, not really the news you want to hear, and that is that FSU has had to pause its off-season workouts, its winter conditioning program, due to COVID and some contact tracing. My understanding is, in talking to sources, that there's multiple players who tested positive early this past week. By Friday, they had shut things down, and that includes the tour of duty drills, so some of the mat drills. Chris, you got a little bit more information on that. We're able to clarify, I guess, the timeline when they're expected back.
Yeah, I was told it would be a brief pause. I wasn't given a specific day, but it didn't sound like it was going to be prolonged. I think they're trying to go with an abundance of caution. I don't think they wanted to turn into something that causes a lengthier pause. So that's why they went ahead and decided against going on Friday.
You know, when we talked to Josh Storms, we had him on the podcast, what was it, like 2 or 3 weeks ago? It was the first thing he talked about was hope, right? It was having hope that he had a full off season without having these massive long hiatuses. So hopefully this is a pretty quick one for Florida State, because getting so many newcomers on campus, whether it was the transfers or just the incoming, I think the six or so early enrollees from high school level, to get them integrated into the strength and conditioning program, to get them adjusted culturally with FSU academics, all that stuff, really important. You want them all to be together as much as possible amid a pandemic. So hopefully that's not too long of a break.
I think it's just insanely difficult to execute any of that right now without expecting some sort of pause or at least, you know, adjustment to it. It was men's and women's basketball at FSU both have experienced pauses of some sort recently. We see it with football, with tour of duty. I know baseball had several guys when they started doing some of the not full team, but individual and preseason work here. They had some guys out contact tracing. It's just, it is what it is right now. It's one of those things where you try to mitigate it as much as possible and handle it as well as you can and get yourself back out there. But it is sort of the thing.
Okay. A few other team notes. Let's see. Carlos Becker no longer on the roster. Former blue chipper, Carlos Becker. He's no longer on the roster. Chris,
couldn't help yourself, could you?
That's a Newberg thing. He told me to not mention names of basically subpar players and headlines for the Facebook. It does better. So that's why I blame Josh. And Josh is nowhere to defend me when I get yelled at.
You're not supposed to tell the behind the scenes business.
Oh, never mind. But he is a former blue chipper. And if you remember, like, Carlos Becker, it was so weird. Like, I was thinking about what when he entered the portal, or not the portal, when he got taken off the roster. He's not on, he doesn't seem like he's playing football anymore, is what it looks like. But when basically,
did he ever?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is among all the disappointments and all the blue chippers who never came to fruition at Florida State, Carlos Becker is one of the most disappointing, because he actually flashed, like, in game what he could be.
Michigan,
the interception, even the games before then, I think it was late against Syracuse that year, his length and size really showed up. And then against Boise State in 2019.
Yeah, you're right. We thought he was going to salvage his career. We thought, right? At least I did. I thought coming off of that year, I really did think he was going to become a player for Florida State. You're right.
He was an excellent high school player. I know Bud liked him a lot. I liked him a lot. He played his backside off on the field in high school.
Ohio State really wanted him. Who it was up against, FSU and Ohio State. And I think, you know, you've detailed kind of what's going on with
him to some degree here. Good for him. I believe he got his degree. You know, I always hope a guy takes advantage of him and gets their degree.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, injuries kind of derailed him, and he was done. I know there was a point in his career, I don't know if it was 2 or 3 years ago, where he was kind of dealing with something. They thought it was sort of a phantom injury, but he wholeheartedly thought he was hurt. And the former staff and him, I don't think, could get on the same page with regards to that situation.
The number one, what is it saying? That the number one attribute is availability. And that's just kind of the deal with Carlos, is he just wasn't readily available for Florida State. Unfortunate, very talented, someone who had NFL upside and actually flashed that at times at the college level. So with that in mind, guys, Josh, you're going to like this. I went through and I dug up some numbers. I got the calculator out. You know, this is your favorite thing. So since Mike Norvell arrived, Chris likes it too. That's right, Daddy. Here we go. Since Mike Norvell arrived at FSU last December, he has basically flipped 60% of the roster. So in 13 months, it's like 56, 57% right now. And that's going to obviously keep changing as a couple more guys leave or they gain more guys. Like the roster is going to keep flipping to where the amount of players is nearly, so more than half the roster has been flipped in about a year. I think that's an impressive, I think we absorb that as a good thing, right?
I think in the long term, it's a good thing. Obviously, you're going to take your lumps early. It was something that we thought Willie Taggart was going to do, but when push come to shove, he just wasn't able to flip the roster like he said he wanted to when he arrived.
And part of that was due, it been documented, the APR restrictions from Jimbo leaving the program in shambles. People like to, when they talk about Jimbo, like to, and how great he was, omit that part of the program was just falling inwards and it was awful and imploding on itself. Regardless, that made things difficult for Willie Taggart, but he never really did follow through on some of the character concerns and issues. Again, some of that he was hamstrung by the situation, but at a certain point you need to kind of show your teeth a little bit and flex some. And Mike Norvell has done a good job of that, of basically having guys move on if they aren't cultural fits, or helping guys, some players realizing maybe this isn't the right place for them and helping them realize that. So I think that's ultimately a good thing for Florida State. Chris, we've got a chance to talk to a couple of new players so far, some of the guys who came here as transfers, Mackenzie Milton being the one that I think the FSU fan base like was overwhelmed by almost immediately. I want to get your thoughts on talking to all those guys and being present for all those interviews, kind of what stood out from talking to some of these newcomers.
I mean, Mackenzie's an impressive dude. You can tell why he's thought of as a high-level leader. He's certainly a kid that's wholeheartedly focused on making his return to the field, and he believes he is physically and mentally prepared to do so. Jermaine Thomas, I liked. I think he used the word grit multiple times. That just got me. You know, it's one of those things I clung on to when he said it. DJ Williams, short and sweet, can't be defined any better than short and sweet by DJ Williams. He just, you know, he got to his point. He said what he had to say. Whoever had to transcribe that interview to that day won the lottery. Jamie Robinson. He's got a person.
It's pronounced Jammy.
No, it is not.
Personality definitely shines through with him, though. Like, you can tell he is a dude that enjoys playing football. He enjoys playing versatility in the secondary. I just like him. I think he's another guy that kind of brings the attitude you want to have on a defense, which is we're going to get after people. We're going to do things, and I want to be good. I want to be the best at what I do. And he spoke kind of a big game in that sense, but I'd rather that than kind of be sheepish. I also like that while they're former teammates and obviously friends, his quickness to kind of sing the praises of Keir Thomas Pup stood out to me too. I think it's always good to have a guy that is comfortable, you know, not talking about himself, but talking about somebody else and talking about him at length like he did. I think that's a very good trait you want to have in a team of guys that kind of praise the other guy across from them. But in general, you know, I think an overriding theme was a lot of SEC guys in that group. Obviously, three of the four that we talked to are SEC guys. And it's about bringing a different kind of attitude and just trying to be a better football team, kind of being a tougher football team, one that's going to grind it out a little bit more and be a little more physical and try to get the job done at a better level. And I think that came across with Keir Thomas, Jamie Robinson, DJ Williams, and Jermaine Thomas. So actually four of them were SEC guys, and then Mackenzie. Yeah, that's about it. And Pop, you know, kind of clarified that he expects to play inside and outside, potentially even the Fox role, which I feel like Sinone should explain because it's such a fun topic for him these days.
I'm going to sit back and write about that today and like rewrite about what the Fox position is, because I think there's still massive confusion. That was what I was going to do, was some kind of headline off of that. Yes.
You were. Of course you were.
Mm-hmm. I just can't deal.
All right. Take us out of here.
Yeah. Stock market's open. Let's go make some money, Josh.
Let's do this.
What about the Super Bowl? Is Josh going for the home team, or does he believe the Chiefs make it two in a row?
Whew. Man, what a year for me and these Tampa Bay sports teams, right?
Yeah, screw the Rays.
No, we're not screwing the Rays. No.
I just can't, like, I want Tampa Bay to win. I don't like Tom Brady, and I just
why? What don't you like about Tom Brady?
He's really good looking, and it makes me jealous that he's so successful in life, and I'm not.
He's 7 years younger than Mahomes' dad. Apparently, Mahomes' dad is 50 this year. I think I saw. Jeez. Brady's 43. Mahomes is 25. You gotta love that.
It was tweeted last night that Tom Brady has participated in 18% of all Super Bowls ever played.
It's not
true. After this weekend or after this Super Bowl, he will have.
I think the Chiefs will win, but I think it could be a really good game. Yeah, I love that Chiefs offense. I love what Andy Reid does. I love how out of the box he's willing to be. And Andy Reid with a Super Bowl ring is a scary man because he's not really scared of like screwing up and being hated on for it because he's won at the highest level. And obviously he took the Eagles there and now the Chiefs. So I think it's fun to watch. I'm a Dolphins fan, so I'm fairly indifferent. I don't hate Brady. I'm in a family full of Boston people. So I've watched so much Brady in the last 20 years. My eyes bleed.
But talking about not being afraid, let's talk about that 4th-and-1 call. Where Tom Brady comes back on the field. Bruce Arians calls a timeout with the kicking team on the field, the punting team on the field. He calls a timeout, trots Tom Brady back out there on 4th-and-1, and he finds Scotty Miller for a touchdown before the half.
That coverage, though. Good Lord, Green Bay, what are you doing?
King, that's a former first-round pick, too.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that was the game. I think that really changed the game right there. So that really changed it.
To tie it into FSU, the Bucs have Garrison Sanborn on their practice squad. They added the long snapper a couple weeks ago. He's been with them for, I think, 4 or 5 weeks now. John Franklin, FSU also includes him in the former Noles. Obviously, he had a brief stint at FSU, actually finished at FAU, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
He's with the Bucs, but he's on injured reserve, has been all year. And then, obviously, Derek Naughty's with the Chiefs. And Naughty's the most, you know, pro-Nole, those bunch, looking for a second Super Bowl ring here.
So if you're an FSU fan that's not an NFL fan, you got plenty of Knowles to watch on the Super Bowl.
I don't think Tom Brady's actually all that good looking. I think he's a little overrated from the
standpoint.
I think he's a really good quarterback, Brandon.
Yes, I think so.
I think he's worth every penny.
Yeah, yeah, he's fantastic. And it's
I can't believe he's 42. Like we were watching the game. None of us are in our 40s. To begin with, but could you imagine even at our age, like going out there and playing a full football game?
Dude, I started jogging again and it is brutal what it does to me for like 3 days afterwards. I need to nap every single day after. I am sore. I'm trying to go with a foam roller. And this dude's like almost 50 years old.
Taking hits from Zadarius, Smith. Yeah. I watched him, Tom Brady threw the ball and Zadarius Smith hit him in the ribs. And me at 38, like I cringed at that hit.
You know who's been arguably the best player in the playoffs I've watched, though, is Chris Jones for KC, the defensive lineman. He messes people up on every damn snap. It's unbelievable to watch how dominant he is at the point of attack.
Yep.
You know, and Aaron Donald's obviously arguably the best player in the NFL, but Jones is right there in the sense of just his dominant force, and he's been unbelievable throughout the whole playoffs.
And another player that's really opened my eyes as I watch the Bucs more and more is Devin White. The middle linebacker out of LSU. I remember when Jimbo was recruiting him. Remember in high school, he was a running back / linebacker. And there was some thought that he was going to maybe play running back at Florida State. FSU really loved that big back. Remember they were trying to get like Jaquez Patrick back then and stuff. So I remember covering Devin White pretty well. He took a late official visit to FSU, didn't he?
I can't remember if he definitely took a visit or not, but I know he's a kid that Jimbo loved.
Mm-hmm.
I also remember he loves riding horses. I just remember that about Devin. I think he actually rode him when he was at LSU too, but he loves riding horses. Funny. Jordan Whitehead's another guy. Obviously, don't know if he's going to be healthy enough for the Super Bowl, but he's been awesome for the Bucs. That Bucs defense is fun to watch. I think it's going to be an excellent Super Bowl. I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'm a Dolphins fan. I was crushed when the Bills annihilated us and made sure we weren't going to playoffs because I really would have liked to get back to the playoffs. Didn't think we were going anywhere in the playoffs, but still would like to be in them. But I've enjoyed watching the NFL playoffs.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have a Super Bowl party.
Oh, are we invited?
Yeah. You guys going to come?
Like a
new house? On the bench shirt that we have.
Oh, we still do need to rock those. Yes.
I drive by your house regularly, so now I'm looking for you to throw it at you. But you
just put it in the mailbox. I don't care. It's a federal offense, but I don't care.
All right, Super Bowl party at my house in 2 weeks. I'm cooking ribs.
Invited. You heard it here on the bench.
Anybody that can fit on the bench.
The password at the door is 5-star review.
Should I read the most recent 5-star review? Are we allowed to?
No.
Okay.
Is that the creepy one about you?
I mean, the guy's name is 12-inch hammer.
Yeah, read it. What's it say?
I love Brendan. If he wasn't married, I would let him have his way with me. Wait, maybe that doesn't matter. Brendan, do I have a chance? Well, 12-inch hammer, if you keep dropping 5-star reviews.
Oh, man.
Maybe.
A man can be bought.
All right, for Chris Nee, Josh Newberg, I'm Brendan Sinnoh. We probably went 5 minutes too long.
Yeah, we're going to go call Nico again, all three of us.
and Zach, too. That poor guy has gotten so many texts and calls from the Bulls 24/7 crew. But you know what? Just pick up your phone, Nico, and we won't have any issues. All right, we'll talk to you guys next time.
Sit.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.